Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 5th of March, Anno Domini 2016, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. The next time you see a billboard on the side of the road, it may also be scanning you. A geolocation tracking feature on billboards owned by Clear Channel Outdoor gives the company new ways to target advertising and measure its effectiveness. The service has caught the eye of privacy advocates who worry that the so-called radar tracker will be able to collect massive amounts of information from smartphones and cars driving past. Radar will collect mobile data from three Clear Channel partners, including AT&T. When you pull all of that together, you have lots of granular information about a person, said Jeffrey Chester, Executive Director of Digital Privacy Group, the Center for Digital Democracy. There are serious privacy issues here. But Clear Channel Outdoor receives aggregated and anonymous data from its partners, not personal information, said Jason King, Vice President of Corporate Communications at Clear Channel Outdoor. The company launched the service in 11 markets earlier this week. The billboards do not have eyes, nor do they have any technology or cameras to see you, he said by email. There is absolutely no exchange of consumer personal information among Clear Channel Outdoor, its advertisers, or the third-party data providers. The consumer data lives with the data providers. But the company could use aggregated data to build detailed profiles of individual smartphone users, Chester said. Using the data from its partners, the billboard company can build a real complex picture of an individual, Chester said. The service is one part of an increasingly personal commercial surveillance system that tracks you on the street. Clear Channel Outdoor, a subsidiary of media giant iHeartRadio, owns billboards in more than 35 U.S. markets, including New York City, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is billboards can track your location. And your choices are, what a great idea, it's no big deal, how do I block it, and I never go anywhere. So far, 76% of you have asked, how do I block it? Followed, of course, by 24% and to say I never go anywhere. Shockingly, nobody has said it's a great idea. Nobody thinks it's no big deal. Now, I know you'll have a lot more to say about this. So after you are done with voting, scroll down on the right. You'll see under fascinating stuff, the very first link is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And at least so far, the number one item in the poll discussion is 5 Mars 16. Billboards can track your locations. Four people have posted so far. We'd love to get your information as well. And of course, if you'd like to talk to us live about this or dang near anything else, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. It's a pretty interesting situation. What we've got is just one more way people are tracking us through our technology. We've heard about, I don't know that it's true, but we've heard about being tracked through the sensors in your tires, the low
tire pressure monitor system.
Yeah. Being able to do that. Certainly, there's lots and lots of cameras that will track your it's license plate number. There are cameras on many billboards that will track to see if people are actually looking up as they walk by at the billboard. Just and watch that, of course, leads to facial recognition.
Just watch a cop show. Yeah, well, we can track you anyway.
and much of that is truer than we'd like to think. And
if the TV producer thought of it, the cops are already doing it.
And, of course, many cars now are internet connected, And a lot of that information continues to be useful outside of the intended use. In addition, don't forget, there are things like Google Maps, when they can tell where congestion is and stuff like that. Some of that is coming from the fact that they track where their cell phones are. Now, you have to turn that on. You get to do that as part of helping Google.
It's usually called location services.
Right, it's location services. You turn that on yourself. So if you don't turn that on, you don't get tracked. Google tries not to be evil, and in some ways they manage it. But many people do have it turned on, and so that's one of the ways that Google gets such amazingly up-to-date information about where congestions are and slowdowns and problems along those lines.
They can actually see, in essence, the cars stopping
right.
and slowing down.
Right. So there's just a bunch of stuff that is possible to do with the technology that we have nowadays. And whether we like it or not, there it is, and it's following us around and figuring out what we do. We see it now also. Companies are buying technology that will find out, let's say you walk into a store and you've got your cell phone on. They can either by Bluetooth or by querying your phone figure out how to send you, say, a coupon for that store or whatever.
And it can even get deeper than that, shelf by shelf.
Right.
They can tell where you're at and...
Right,
they can tell where you at.
Yeah, well done you. So we're seeing a lot of that, and I don't know that genie's ever going to go back in the bottle. I mean, so far, I'm pretty sure we don't all have chips embedded in us somewhere. But other than that, had somebody said, we've said this many times before, if somebody said as little as 20 years ago, we would willingly carry around a device that let people track us 24/7, we would laugh in their faces.
Yeah.
And yet, here it is.
But it's so convenient to be able to pull out your phone and the map knows where you are. Well, the reason it knows where you are is because it's been tracking you. So it knows where you are. In fact, even cell phones in general, before we had all the mapping and GPS stuff on it, you see that on the cop shows too. They triangulate the cell towers, so they know what cell tower your signal is going through. That becomes a huge area when you triangulate three cell towers, but it's a start.
It's a start. And we're just going to see more and more of it as time goes on. There's no question of that. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hiya, Ed. What's up?
Hi. I need to replace my laptop because I broke my screen. It was getting old anyway. And so I don't know if it's better to go with a Windows 7 and then upgrade it when I need to in a couple months or just start out with a Windows 10.
You know what? Honestly, at this point, I just go with Windows 10 personally. Just get it and live with it. Because if you buy something with Windows 10 on it, then theoretically somebody's gone to all the trouble of putting the right set of drivers on it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you get Windows 7, then who knows if the driver updates are all there and blah, blah, blah. So I would go, I'd go Windows 10 myself.
Okay.
Especially since if you're planning on upgrading anyway, it's better off getting it to start with.
And you are going to upgrade. You don't get that choice. You will upgrade.
Yeah. So what should I look for in terms of minimum hard drive memory? I don't do any gaming.
Well, you need more than that. You need to make
as
sure
much
that,
as you can afford and stick in the machine.
Right. You definitely want the i-series, not Celeron processors or any of that stuff. You want either the i-series from Intel or the a-series from AMD. I would say an i5 or 7. I would say...
You just added a comma.
I did. I did.
And that becomes a choice. How long do you want to keep the machine?
Right.
If you don't mind throwing it away in 6 months, you can get a $300 computer.
Right.
No, I want to keep it for a long time.
Yeah.
Right. In terms of memory, 4 gig to me is an absolute minimum. 8 would certainly be better. Hard drive, how much stuff do you plan on storing on it as opposed to in the cloud or on an external storage device?
Not much. I mean, my current thing is 320 gigabytes, and I don't come anywhere close to filling that.
So, and a lot of the newer machines are coming with SSDs to be faster, but in general, they're smaller than a spinning hard drive because they cost twice as much as a compatible spinning hard drive.
Right.
So what you used to get a terabyte hard drive in your laptop, you might only get 256 or 512 SSD to keep the price down.
Right.
And with all the cloud storage today, and most people don't necessarily need huge amounts of local storage.
Right. I have a Windows 10 machine. It's an i5. With 8 gig of RAM, it's got a 320, I think, gig hard drive in it, and it's adequate for everything I do. I also am not a gamer, but in terms of storage, as Steve said, because I save everything in the cloud or to external storage, or actually both, so I don't. I have used very, very little of my actual hard drive space. I did load up a bunch of pictures so that when the screensaver comes on, I see them. But I didn't have to, because frankly, the screensaver rarely comes on when I'm using the machine anyway.
Well, I don't do much on the cloud because we have only moderate speed internet. We can't get high speed.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And generally, pictures aren't that big. You know, 2 or 3 megs for each picture. So even then, you can store thousands on even a small drive.
Right. Okay?
Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
All right, good luck. Let us know what you get.
Sorry?
Let us know what you get.
Yeah, I will do that. Thanks.
And a lot of times you'll see even the name brands, you know, like Dell and Toshiba and HP, they'll have a cheap line and then they'll have a good line. And the cheap lines will be the Celerons, you know, the i3s even, 4 gigs of RAM, you know, so smaller, so you can get cheap. But then you're going to outgrow it so much faster, and you generally want to go with the more expensive models because they're generally made better, they have better internal components, you know, faster, the i5s, the i7s, and they just last longer.
Yeah.
And especially, we're seeing people keep their computers longer and longer because they cost so much. So like I said earlier, if you don't mind buying a new computer every 9 months, a year, $300, fine, throw it away and buy a new one.
Or get a Chromebook.
Yeah, and that pretty much will last for almost forever.
Kind of forever on mine. I've got the original CR47, which was the Google actually gave them out, and they were the reference model from which other people built Chromebooks.
Mm-hmm.
And it recently updated to the latest. I really need to get it out and try it again, but it updated to the latest version of Chrome. It's slow.
Yeah,
it was never designed to be a usable computer, but it works.
Well, as I told you, I was in Syracuse yesterday.
Yep.
And Kathy's sister, they've got an old machine. It was Windows 7 when it first came out. It's old. It's tired. We got to get a new computer. I says, hold on. Come up. I'll show you a Chromebook. So we sat there, and I showed her. I said, all right, so here's what you can do with the Chromebook. I said, no. All right. Went through it, as far as documents and spreadsheets and looking for this and doing this and doing that the kids would even want to do. I said, so what can't you do on this that you were doing on the other? She goes, not a thing.
Yep.
Not a thing. She goes, and I can hook up a printer. I go, yep.
At Christmas, when we went to visit my sister-in-law, we went to visit my daughter, and my sister-in-law lives nearby. Let's be honest. I love my sister-in-law, but we went to visit my daughter. At Christmas, I brought a Chromebook. And that's all we needed to do, everything we wanted to do. We were at Rochester Google's on Thursday. And the guy said, he was talking about, he said, well, can you do Photoshop? I said, no. Do you do Photoshop now? No. Okay. All right. I got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, 19 minutes after the hour. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll be right back. Soundbites. Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Vic from Irondequoit, New York on the line. Hi, Vic. What's up?
Hi, guys. While my wife and I are finally moving into the 21st century, we've got Samsung Galaxy S7s coming next week.
So holy moly.
First, smartphone, so a little scared, a little nervous.
Sure.
My main question is, our emails are Hotmail. Now, that's Google base. Now, are we going to be able to use our Hotmail account? I never asked them at the store.
Yeah, you should be able to. Hold on a second. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you can use any mail service you want. It doesn't have to be based on the OS on your computer.
Oh, okay.
You can have Microsoft Hotmail. You could have Apple iCloud Mail. You could have Roadrunner Mail. It doesn't matter.
Oh, all right.
Although I do expect that the Google Mail app is optimized for Google Mail. But it should work with any mail service.
Okay, well, this is all new to me. This is our first smartphone, so...
There you go.
I have tablets. I can use them. That's not a problem. But the smartphones, I know, are a lot different.
Right. Well, up to a point they are, but not terribly different. But I'm looking at it right now. So I went into the Gmail app, and it said set up email, and I have a choice, Google, which obviously would set up in a half an instant, and personal, which is IMAP or POP, and it mentions Yahoo, Outlook, etc.
Yeah, part of the confusion is that Microsoft has changed the name of their email service, what, 6-7 times? So it used to be Hotmail, then it was Livemail, and most recently it's Outlook.com.
Right.
Which is in no way tied to the Outlook app.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you should have no problem putting in your Hotmail address.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm looking forward to getting the phones next week.
Sure. Here's the deal. Yep. Take your time. Pay attention to what you're looking at and read all the helps.
And maybe have your tablet next to you so you can look up things you don't understand.
Right.
Yeah, well, they offer classes. There's three levels of classes, a kind of a beginning, the basic stuff, then intermediate, then more advanced. So we're definitely going to be taking all of those.
What phone do you have right now?
I have a dumb phone. I have a Casio flip phone that I've had for a long time.
Okay.
My wife's... phone finally decided to, it's not charging. When you get a battery charged up, it lasts a half a day. And so we decided it's time. We got to move into the new world right now. So
because, what Samsung did do is if you have any other previous phones, they created what they call Samsung Swap. And what it is at the dealership there, they can take your two phones, log in from one into both, and copy literally everything that's on your old Samsung phone over to your new one.
So your contacts are the
every
key one.
App, every contact, everything gets moved over.
Yeah, and mine, we don't have any apps because this is just a basic dumb phone.
Yep.
My contacts, I definitely want. That's all I have on them is just contacts.
Yep.
Well, what I might suggest doing is, write them down something because it's a dumb phone, but so that you have a record of them just in case they screw it up at the...
Who's your carrier?
Well, Verizon has a...
Verizon has a contact assistance
app. Yeah, they have a way to do that. So, yeah, you should be all right.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much, guys.
All right, enjoy.
Thank you.
Yep.
Apple has an Android to iPhone transition. Does Google have an iPhone to Android transition?
I don't know. I've never bothered to
probably
look.
Not.
Probably not, so but I don't know. I've never bothered to look.
Switching platforms is always tricky.
Yeah, well, it's always been, though.
Yeah.
Macs want to go to the PC side, but PCs never wanted to go to the Mac side.
That's true.
We had to acknowledge that PCs exist and give ourselves translation tools. And that's the one thing that still annoys me to death about PC, IT guys. You can't hook a Mac to a PC network. You can't hook a Mac to a PC file share. Yes,
you can.
You can. For the last 20 years. Yes, you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Macs don't have a two-button mouse. Yes, they do.
Yep.
In fact, right now they have a no-button mouse. It's a sensor. You can use one finger, two fingers, three fingers. You can give it the finger.
You can do gestures.
You do five-finger gestures, yeah. And PCs are catching up on that, too.
Yep. All right, so here's a news item, speaking of Apple.
Apple has expanded its presence on Twitter, adding an English language general support channel simply called @AppleSupport, which it says will be tweeting out tips and tricks as well as offering to help users with any Apple-related questions they may have.
Where'd that come from?
Rob is controlling your computers over there.
Oh, there you go.
I'm potting that one down.
Yeah. We're here to
nice
provide.
Nice going, Rob.
Well done.
That was
Rob.
In stereo, too.
Yeah. It went from one side to the other.
We're here to provide tips, tricks, and helpful information when you need it most. And if you have a question, well, we're here to help with that, too, the @AppleSupport Twitter blog reads. Within the first 3 hours, the account had already amassed more than 35,000 followers and fielded a swath of questions from Twitter users, from queries about why calendar entries are disappearing to frayed MacBook cables to iCloud backup woes and plenty more besides, including a few folks trying their luck to ask about future products and getting a polite, "we don't comment on future products" response from the support staff. The first tip the account tweeted was a how-to photo guide for the Notes app showing how to turn bog-standard lists into active checklists. It's not the first official Twitter support channel that Apple has created by any means. There was already an Apple Music Help Twitter account, for example, and the official App Store Twitter account has been around since fall 2009. Also, the Beats by Dr. Dre brand has had a Twitter support account since 2012, long before Apple acquired the company. But Apple creating an overarching Twitter support account aimed at fielding any and all Apple-related queries feels a bit more significant than siloed support accounts for particular services. Could it be that Apple is expanding its public-facing presence as it steps up its legal fight with the FBI over encryption and iOS security? Or perhaps it's just trying to cover more customer support bases, given that Twitter is a common outlet for people to tweet complaints when their gadgets and gizmos go wrong. Apple puts a lot of emphasis on customer support as part of its premium branding position, so providing another public support channel should further bolster the perception of strong after-sale services, even if there's an element of it somehow seeming slightly out of character for Cupertino to so publicly engage in discussions of product problems in public. But we are now well into the Tim Cook Apple era, which has been characterized as having a more open attitude to publicity and business information than the Apple of old. So, can you describe your Mac problem in 140 characters? Give us a call or tweet to them, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
I see a lot of times that Apple's had their discussion forums for a long time, like we do here, but as typical with most companies, there's no official presence in the forums. It's all user to user. So it's nice that now you've got some official way to ask Apple a question other than on the phone or make an appointment at the Genius Bar in 2 weeks.
Right. Well, and that's an interesting question as well. What kind of information can they give out? How much information can you give out in 140 characters? I guess most of it is just pointing at an article somewhere else.
And a lot of the responses are direct message us with more details, and direct messages can have 10,000 characters
right,
now, right?
Right.
Another off topic, but it was from last week's show.
Let's finish this thought first. Hang on to that idea.
That might be hard for me.
Yeah, I know. Write it down. You got paper. And he reaches for the pen!
Yeah.
And he reaches for the pen!
I suffer from CRS today.
It's craft. Here's the thing about that. What it could devolve into is somebody asks a question, somebody back sitting at that Twitter account Googles the answer, and then points them to it.
There are already a couple that point to Apple Tech Notes.
Right.
Which would be better than going to a random Google search. But yeah.
Right.
And it looks like they've also got a new domain name, apple.co, for a URL shortener.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so Dave, if you remember.
Yeah, I think I do.
Okay, good.
No, I had a couple of folks asking. Last week we were talking about the Windows 10.
Yep.
And the other annoying features that you can turn off.
Yeah.
Was there a list? Somebody thought they said they heard you have a list.
There was a list. It was in AskNick.com. Hold on a second. Let me see.
They were wondering if we could post it on our page. Because a few folks were going through. Matter of fact, I finally upgraded one of my desktop units to Windows 10. And so far, for what little bit I've had a chance to play with it, it's not bad. So far, I'm impressed that, you know, at least I got my toolbar back there, and I can pull up programs and do that type of stuff. I will admit I've got to spend a lot more time playing around with it. But I did have a couple folks asking about turning off some of those other features in the list because they have noticed those. I'm wondering how to do it. And I said, well, funny, we were just talking about that last week on the show.
Got it. That's the one. Go ahead. Okay. I'll let you post it.
And it's like, gee, I've been playing with the Chromebook so much right now.
Yeah, right.
And I don't have that issue.
He kind of looks like you, too.
Yeah, he kind of does.
His beard is darker.
Right. But, yeah, so what happened is I had a link to an article last week. Actually, just a couple of days ago on AskNick.com, 7 ways Windows 10 pushes ads at you and how to stop them. And that's one of the biggest headaches. You can get ads everywhere now. They come in Cortana. They come in the Windows
update notice.
Lock screen. They the come in screen, the Windows yeah. update notice. They come everywhere. And start menu has ads. You constantly see Get Office and Skype if you don't already have them. Bing, of course, if you do Bing, it's going to be all ads. Branded ads will happen, and there's a bunch more. For example, if you bought Solitaire, first now you have to pay for Solitaire and Minesweeper, by the way, and it's not just
seriously,
and it's not just a one-time fee. It's a subscription, $10 a year.
Annual license.
For each of them, and they come with ads.
Oh, heck no.
This is why I'm not allowed to carry a gun. That's the reason, right there. So, now, there are a million free Solitaires and free Minesweepers. But if you're a Microsoft person and you see that ad that says, get Solitaire for only $10 a year. You click on it, you get it. Now you get ads in Solitaire, which you just paid for.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't promise to take the sand out of the Vaseline.
Yeah, exactly. You always hurt the ones you love when you put sand in the Vaseline. Never mind.
But no, I mean, that's where I can see more and more folks going to Chromebooks or some other operating system.
Yep.
Tablets are becoming the way to go, and with cloud, Microsoft.
Well, every computer manufacturer, including Apple, is finding that their future is going to be in tablets. People are buying fewer and fewer desktops, fewer and fewer laptops, and many of the laptops are going to Chromebooks because they already have a device that does most of what they want to do, some form of tablet, whether it's an iPad or it's an Android tablet of some sort. And so when you get the need for a keyboard, you're almost always doing something online. So having a Chromebook makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
You know, a friend of mine said, well, I need to buy a new laptop. Excuse me. I said, what do you do? She said, basically, I have one email account, which happened to be a Gmail account. I have I spend most of my time on Facebook and playing the Zynga games. I said, well, you know, for a couple hundred bucks, you can get yourself a Chromebook and be done. And she did, and she couldn't possibly be happier because she doesn't need more. What she does, it does for her. I was talking the other day about the guy who kept asking at the Rochester Googles meeting, kept saying, can I do Photoshop? And I finally said, do you own Photoshop? He said, no. Then who cares if you can do Photoshop?
Yeah, really.
And there's a dozen of photo editing apps, just not Photoshop.
Yeah.
Right, trademark right. Adobe.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And in fact, I have a friend, and we were going to have him do something last week, but he didn't. We didn't have time. We just had questions. He does a lot of editing. He does audio editing. He does video editing on a Chromebook with online apps, most of which are free.
Yeah, and that's what I was showing to folks. You know, they said, "Well, I don't want to do this." I go, "Well, go to the App Store," and we did a search. There you go.
and lots of stuff that you can download from the App Store is ridiculously useful. They just added a whole bunch of most of them are free, and they added a bunch of editing things to Google Photos, and of course Google also just updated their voice dictation to do voice commands in their online app. So you can see, you know, new paragraphs, select this line, change the color, whatever it is you're going to do. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we were just chatting during the break that, yes, MySpace is still alive. Well, alive.
Yeah, that's about it.
Well, alive.
Not dead yet.
Abe Vigoda finally died.
Yes, he did.
And the Is Abe Vigoda Dead website took a while to update.
Yes, it did.
Poor guy, 90-something? Ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked old in Barney Miller 30 years ago.
He was old in Barney Miller 30 years ago. He was 70-something then. Yeah.
Whoa.
So, yeah. Let me just close that down. So, all right. Don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Just going back, though, like I said, I was sharing my experience with Windows 10. So far, I mean, I've talked to a few other folks, and they are listening. You know, a number of them mentioned, oh, I'm glad I took your advice.
And waited.
And some of them checked. Because I had two different folks, though. Their software wasn't quite ready yet for Windows 10. One of them called this other program that they were, wanted to know on, and the company happened to say, no, give us a few more weeks. We're coming out with it. We're on top of it, but, you know, we're waiting for everything else to settle. Because that's the other thing. Windows 10 was changing their code constantly. And for developers to sit there and get things to work right, if they're trying to do it on a moving target, it's pretty hard. So that's why some folks, you just got to have patience. It will come. And from what I've seen so far at my end, Windows 10 is decent.
Yep.
Unlike Windows 8, which, you know, I never installed it once on any machine, just like I would never install that other great.
Yeah. The V word.
Yeah. And
yeah, and the M word.
Yeah, those two on any machine. I never sold a copy. I never will. But this seems to be all right. But again, I'm still, you know, folks. Well, he's giving it away free. That's the other thing that frustrates me. Folks are so hooked up. Well, he's giving it away free, so I won't have to worry about it. I go, no, you don't understand this one. And for the rest of you folks out there, yes, he's giving it free to you right now. You don't have a key code or anything else that you have to type in. So you technically don't own that.
Right.
So next year when he comes along and says, oh, your subscription is due for Windows 10, either you pay it or we're shutting it down. And that's what will happen. You'll probably be given, say, 30 days to renew. Or that machine is going to shut down. Well, I'll just keep using the existing version. No, it's going to shut down.
I told you that.
It's built in, folks. Well, a lot of folks don't get that. They go, well, no, I'll just ignore that and just keep going with the version I have. They do right now with Windows 7 and the rest of them. They think they can just keep going on and ignore those updates. No, you're not going to be able to. Once you get Windows 10 on your machine, you're done. The party's over with, folks. The fat lady has sung, and you now got to pay whatever they dictate you will pay for that yearly lease.
Right, right. It's a subscription service. Well, and that same thing, and Steve pointed this out weeks ago, that same thing's going to happen to your Windows 7 that you've taken off the network.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, it's going to say, we have to verify that you have a legitimate copy of Windows, and we can't because you're not on the network anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you connect to the network, it's going to say, oh, you have to upgrade now. So that's going to be, I mean, you can't be off the network forever. You just can't be. So there's an issue with that. Now you can.
So the trick
people will get around it by constantly
setting the clock back.
Well, no, you can't set.
No.
That's not going to work either. They're going to have to do something along the
like
lines.
Like anything else, and all I will say is, like anything else, folks find ways.
But at some point, they become so convoluted and so complex and such a pain in the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just look at buying an operating system that doesn't do that, like Linux or a Mac or a Chromebook?
Well, like I say.
Mm-hmm. What the heck? I mean, at some point, give it up.
Well, that's the thing. For the most part, as I'm exploring more and more, that's why I say I haven't had time with that Windows 7 or 10 machine that I upgraded because I've been focusing on the Chromebook.
Right.
And setting everything up for that. And I'm finding that even when that point comes in time, when you know, because I'm hoping within the next week or so, pull that machine, my desktop off the network.
Yep.
That by the time I need to, this other stuff that I'm working on, I won't need it because I can do it again on the cloud.
Right. Right.
A lot of that stuff is up there, and one of them, which I already did some exploring into, was Quicken.
Yep. Quicken online.
I just need more time to get that set up. So, but that'll, I know I'll have more than enough time before my Windows 7 machine gets, totally mucked up. And I don't care then. But then would be a good time to go to Linux on that.
Yep.
But for right now, I'm focusing on the Chromebook, and that is impressing the hell. The way it just turns on so fast.
Yep.
Boom. 9 hours of life.
Yeah. Yeah, 9 hour battery life.
9 hour battery life. I got a 15-inch screen, which is 1920 by 1080.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
They're amazing products.
Yeah.
But for those of you who are looking to go to Windows 10, I will tell you, it's very much like Windows 7. It works very much the same way. You will not be shocked. When you start it up, and you will be able to find things. Obviously, it's not going to be set up the way your desktop used to be set up, but you can make it be set up that way, and it's actually pretty cool. It should work just fine. In terms of moving to something like a Chromebook, I get it. People are reluctant to give up what they already know, but
yeah,
I have more faith in you than you do. Clearly, I don't think you're stupid. I think you can do it. It's just a matter of wanting to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just letting go. You got to learn to swim in the deep end and let go of that ledge, and you'll learn how to swim.
Yep.
But right now, folks are hanging on to that ledge because they're afraid of the deep water.
Well, and also, it is a pain in the neck at a certain point to stop and say, let me catalog everything I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're afraid you're going to forget something, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's why I'm giving myself the time. And like I told you, I was getting things ready before I even got the Chromebook.
Yep.
And like you say, you got to have a plan.
And one way that you get things ready is start using Chrome on your desktop or your laptop. And do everything that you can through Chrome, including all those online things, and you'll discover that so much of the stuff that you think you can't do, you can do. It does take a little bit of looking to find, what and where and how, but it will work. And
that's what we're here for. We can help you find that stuff.
And that's what we're here for. I just found an app for Chrome, not just the Chromebook, that does one of those things where it will record, say, a class or a meeting, and then sync, and you can take notes while it's happening, and they will sync up with the recording. So you can go back, and somebody's talking about blah, 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 and mm-hmm. then you will see the synchronized note that says, whatever note you took at the keyboard. So that's something that's very useful to me, particularly when I'm having meetings with students, and they bring something up that I want to talk about or mm-hmm. that I want to record for myself. So yeah, those kind of things are out there. They're available, and it's just a matter of finding them and knowing what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, in terms of using a Chromebook for everyday stuff, it's pretty easy, pretty amazing. The stuff that you can do is kind of astonishing when you delve into what's possible. Everybody knows about the one or two big things like Photos and Gmail and stuff like that, but there's an amazing number of extensions and add-ons that you can have for Chrome, the Chrome browser, whether it's on a Chromebook or it's on a desktop. And so you can do a lot of the stuff you want to do. All right, we at least have time to talk to get questions from Joel from Pittsford, New York. Hi, Joel, what's up?
Hi, guys. I just wanted to confirm. I've been doing a lot of research on this. You guys have been talking about Microsoft having an annual fee for Windows 10, and Microsoft's gay ball head, there will never be an annual fee for Windows 10. So you keep talking about this, but everything that's on the web, including quotes from senior Microsoft officials, say there will never be an annual fee for Windows 10.
So well, that's exactly right.
Of your information is.
Well, it's not going to be a fee for Windows 10. It's a fee for the next version of Windows, which will just be called Windows.
Well, maybe I misunderstood what you all were saying earlier, but it seemed like you were saying that Microsoft intended to have a fee, and that's not the case.
Well, here's the deal.
Yeah.
Windows 10 is going to work like every other version of Windows. At some point, you will be told it's no longer a viable thing, and you will be nagged and nagged and nagged to upgrade until that upgrade becomes semi-automatic the way it's happening on 7 and 8 to 10.
But that is not the case for Windows 10 because they have committed, like all other operating systems, to a life cycle, and they've committed to supporting Windows 10 for 10 years.
Yes, yes, they have.
And that's what they do with all other versions of the operating system. So I'm not sure why you guys are picking on Windows 10.
Windows 10 will be supported in the mainstream for 5 years.
Right.
It will be out of mainstream support in 2020.
They did that with Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do it with everything else. It's
right.
Only 10 years if you pay for extended support.
And the other thing that Microsoft has said, after Windows 10, there will be no more numbering.
We'll probably still call it 11. Or
yes. They'll call it Windows. Yeah.
There'll be an internal build number.
Yeah.
That's right, but I think you have to be clear that Windows 10 is not going to be sold as a subscription service.
No, we've never... Right. No, it's not Windows 10, it's Windows.
Windows, which will the come next, by next year.
The next version, yeah.
Right.
Maybe the year after. Middle of this year, isn't it?
Well, it might be.
Yeah.
Because I mean,
they said they're not going to be working on the next version or not releasing the next version for at least 3 years.
Maybe.
A company can't.
So this information is available on the internet. So I really would like you guys to be clear on this stuff. And I think people are being confused. I teach Windows classes, and people come in and say, "I heard on Soundbites that we're going to have to pay for a subscription for Windows 10." So you know, people are misinterpreting.
Well, if we actually said 10, I apologize.
Yeah.
If we actually said 10, I apologize.
Yeah.
But what we generally say is that there will be a fee for Windows.
Yes, because that's the only way a company can stay in business. They can't keep giving away an operating system.
Well, Apple can because they sell the hardware.
Yeah. But, I mean, Windows can't. I mean, they're going to eventually, I think this is killing them that they're not charging for Windows 10, even some monetary fee. I mean, if it was $25, they'd be getting some money. Right now, they're getting nothing. And a company can't stay in business.
Software as a service is the trend in the industry.
Right.
Well, then, folks are easily fooled if they think they're going to keep getting Windows for free.
Yeah,
there's no free lunch. I'm sorry.
After Windows 10. And let us be clear, it is after Windows 10. Microsoft has already said they're going to be charging for it.
Good enough. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Yep.
All right, thanks. But you're right. It's not Windows 10. It's after Windows 10.
Yes.
And in another 10 years, we'll be bringing this back up again.
Well, most 5 years, right?
Yeah,
because
Windows 10 goes off mainstream support in 2020.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you are a major organization, you can pay a bucket load of cash to continue having extended support till 2025. But you as an individual listening to this show, your mainstream support will end in October 13th, 2020.
And people will be kicking and screaming, just like we still have XP users, we still have 7 users. Right. Yeah, they're gonna drag that out as long as they can.
And it is the speculation in the industry, although Microsoft has not said as much. It is the speculation in the industry that the same sort of thing that happened with 7 and 8 will happen with 10. once it comes near the end of mainstream support, you will start being nagged to upgrade. And eventually, as Microsoft is already doing with 7 and 8, it will become the suggested update, then the preferred update, then I forget what they call the next one, but where they basically just say, unless you say no, we're going to install it.
Mm-hmm. Recommended, then required.
Required, that's the one. So, yeah, I think that what we're going to see is that eventually Windows 10 will become nagware, just like 7 and 8 are becoming now, and people will want to have, Microsoft will want to have you upgrade to Windows with no number, and they will charge you an annual subscription fee for that. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. We've wasted an hour of your life with this. We're going to do it again. On the other side of this slightly longer break, we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and it is right here on the truly great, and thanks to you, listener-supported, Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we are having a little bit of trouble with the video on YouTube, but Steve is working on it diligently as we go along. We spoke a little bit earlier about Google Photos. When Google broke Photos out from Google Plus, there were a lot of benefits: a canny search algorithm, unlimited storage for compressed photos, and a whole lot more. One thing that got lost, however, was the Snapseed-based photo editing tool in Google Plus that gave users a decent option to Adobe's Photoshop. Luckily, Snapseed is still available as a standalone Android app. In the latest web-based version of Photos, Google has made some much-needed improvements to the editing tools. For one thing, while you're making edits, you can move between images, and the system will save any changes. When you're ready, you just have to hit Done or Revert to Original if you decide not to keep the tweaks. There's also a new aspect ratio selector that lets you crop exactly to the original size: square, 4x3, 6x9, 16x9. So far, the tweaks haven't appeared in the Photoshop smartphone, in the Photos smartphone app, but it seems like a no-brainer that they'll arrive there soon. This is by no means a substitute for a full-featured photo editor like GIMP or Photoshop, but let's face it, most of us don't need GIMP or Photoshop. The tools that Google provides are the typical quick fixes that most people use regularly. So, do you use Google Photo, and what do you think of the new tools? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, and toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I use an Android phone, and one of the nice things that you can do, of course, is to say automatically upload my pictures to Photos.
Mm-hmm.
And because the camera's native format is 16 megapixels, it means that those photos take up no space.
Right.
on Google Photos because 16 megapixels is the maximum size you can use without having to pay having to take up space.
Yep.
So I take pictures quite regularly, and it really it seems like seconds before they're up there. It's a 4G.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 4G thing. So
yeah, no, I love it because the all of them mine I've put up there, and it's you know I don't have to worry about it,
yep.
And I can you know. Whether I'm on my tablet, or on my phone, or on my computer, I just pull up Google Photo, and there they all are.
Yep.
And then you can do a search, too.
When my cat passed, my cat just passed recently, and so I wanted to put up some pictures of her, and all I had to do was go into Photos and say Black Cat,
yep.
And there were, it was every picture of her. It's not 100%. I did get a couple of pictures of one of our black dogs. But, you know,
hey, compared to previous days.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Hello, to be able to do a search on photos. It's not like there's words there written on the photos. It's totally, looking at each photo and doing its best guess.
Yeah.
And it's doing a darn good job from what I've seen so far.
Oh yeah. It's pretty amazing. And Google has added a new thing, which is it has a feature that will figure out where a picture was taken. So if you didn't geotag something, mm-hmm. It can figure out based on, I don't know what, magic, apparently, where that picture was taken.
Looking at everybody else's pictures that has geotags.
Probably. But it's magic to me.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. I was showing it at the meeting, at the Rochester Google's meeting a while ago, and I typed in white car, and it brought up all the pictures I had of a white car. And then there was one picture of a red car, and everybody went, ha, it's screwed up. So I zoomed it in. If you look through the car, there's a white car white behind car it.
Gotcha.
Gotcha. But it's pretty amazing. I have some pictures where people are named and others where they are not. And mm-hmm. If I look up my friend Sam, mm-hmm. I have one picture where her name appears in the title. And mm-hmm. So it finds all the pictures of Sam.
Because
of face recognition and like mm-hmm. that. So it's pretty amazing little product. And you can put up, like I said, as long as they fit. Within the 16 parameters,
16 megapixels or less.
16 megapixels or fewer. And honestly, when you're saving them up to a medium that will basically show them on the screen, you don't need more. Mm-hmm. You still have the original on your phone, which you should save out to your computer or an
somewhere.
External hard drive
somewhere
or somewhere. And that's on you, but having a version that's immediately accessible and up to 16 megapixels, which is far more than your computer can show, frankly, is great, is really kind of great. So, I really, and it's not the only one out there. Something does the same thing, doesn't it? Isn't there an iSomething?
A photo stream as part of iCloud.
Yeah.
Puts all your photos from your... the last 1,000 photos from your devices up to the cloud so they can sync down to the other devices. iCloud Photo Library does do all of your photos, but then you may have to pay for more storage space. Apple is still one of the smallest free storages. You get 5 gigabytes free.
Right.
Your photo stream doesn't count toward that 5 gigabytes, but your photos do. So it's very confusing. Photo stream doesn't count. Photo library does count.
Okay.
And when you set up your devices, you want to turn on photo library? And most people say, well, okay, sure. And then you start getting messages that your iCloud storage is full and you need to buy more. 50 gigs is only $1 a month, but it could be higher for free.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. and for some people, 50 gigs still isn't enough for all their photos.
Right. What I really love is Google gives you 15 gigs free. And then every once in a while, they have some sort of deal. Like when you buy a Chromebook, you get 100 gigs for 2 years. Every year whatever they call it, computer
safe,
security
safer
day
internet day. Yeah, I missed that one. I didn't hear about it till the next day, and it was already gone.
Yeah. You can, on security day, computer security day, Google actually puts all kinds of notices everywhere for it. And so what you do is you then click on that, and it takes you to Google's privacy and blah, blah, blah thing. And you answer a couple of questions, and you check your privacy settings and all that other stuff. And if you do that, they give you an extra 2 gig. So I now have 19 gig because I've done that twice.
Cool.
So
that was February 9th.
Yeah, it's February 9th.
So invent a time machine. Yeah.
or set in thing a reminder for next year, yeah. To do it next year. So that's really very nice, actually. An extra 2 gig a year is a decent amount of storage. And, you know, even so, even without any of that, the amount of storage, that 15 gig, because don't forget, if you, some of that storage, you know, that storage is for everything, whether it's photos or whatever, but documents that you do in Google Drive
don't take up any space.
As long as they're in Google format, Google Docs, Google Sheets, Google Presentations, Google, I think it's called Google Presents, or I don't remember, but it's word processing and spreadsheets and presentation programs. As long as you save them in Google's own format, they take up zero space. I have all my over 1,000 columns from the newspaper up there. Mm-hmm. They take zero space because I have told Google when I upload a document, convert it.
Yep.
So it happens automatically. And once it's there, by the way, I can then download it as a Word document or an ODF document or a PDF document or whatever I want it to be. And so it's pretty cool. And 100 gigs a month is not a lot of money. How is it? 100 gig rather is how much a month?
$2 a month.
Twice what Apple is charging.
Well, Apple's charging $1 for 50 gigs.
It's the same price.
Yeah.
Okay, $2 a month, so it's $24 a year.
Or $10
for
a month.
100 gigs.
$10 a month if you want a terabyte.
You have a terabyte of disk space for $10 a month. That's not a lot of money when you get right down to it.
Yep.
You know, you're gonna buy some sort of high end storage device. You're gonna pay a couple of $100 for that. There's 2 years of storage.
Yep.
You know, so and nowadays they're even bigger and even better. We actually have a story about the new Samsung SSD card. SSD drive that's 15 terabytes.
Ouch.
And we'll talk about that next time we do a news story. But so, yeah, you know, if you're not taking advantage of the cloud in some way to back stuff up, one of the things that I do is I have a bunch of domain names that I keep track of, and I'm paying for online, obviously an online account that manages all those. And because I have the number of them I have, I opted for the unlimited account. I can have an unlimited number of domains. I can have an unlimited number of subdomains, an unlimited number of email addresses, and I can have an unlimited amount of storage. And I've been testing that, frankly, because having a place on the web, on the internet, excuse me, where I can save everything, an extra place to save everything, is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it doesn't cost me a lot of money every year to have that. Of course, for me, it's easy to do because I do have Greenlight. I do have fiber technology to my home. So I can upload at ridiculously fast speeds. I can download at super ridiculously, ludicrous speed.
Never show this again.
Yes, but still, it doesn't really matter one way or the other. The ability to have storage out on the internet somewhere where you can keep a copy, not the copy. There should be nowhere where you have the copy of anything, including your phone or anything. But a copy, an extra copy, is just for that peace of mind. I've been saying for decades, if you're a system administrator, you are not paranoid enough. I don't care how paranoid you are not paranoid enough. And the reality is that nowadays, every single one of you out there is your own system administrator. And you have no one to blame but yourself when your computer dies and you have no backups. We say this all the time, and people call us and say, my computer died, what do I do? Well, start with your backup. Oh, I don't have a backup. Well, then you're screwed is how that works.
I meant to.
Well, yeah, that works.
Well, I have a backup 6 months.
Good intentions. Broke down, paid with them.
Yep, I've got a backup. It's about 6 months old.
Yep.
Then you don't really have a backup.
That's right. Nope. Is your backup older than today? You don't have a backup. Is your backup older than the last time you created or changed a document?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right? I mean, if you have literally not written or created any sort of anything in 2 years, then you don't need backups.
Right.
But for the rest
That's
of
not
us...
The...
Right, right.
Well, computers don't break. We hear that all the time. Why did it break?
As they're bringing them in for repair.
Yeah. Why did it? Yeah. Why did it break? Things break.
Yeah.
Stuff happens.
I don't know. Let me get out my crystal ball.
Right.
It's a little foggy. My crystal ball is broke. It's at the shop.
We keep telling people, look, Google has billions of hard drives. So they have empirical data that proves the average hard drive lasts about 5 years.
It's 20%.
What that means is... 20%
per year failure rate.
Right.
So the second year it's 40%. The third year it's 60%.
Right. So what happens is this: 5 years mean time between failures means that some hard drives last 10 years, some hard drives die right out of the box, and everywhere in between. So even if you just bought a brand new computer, you start backing that sucker up because you do not know. Do not ask for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee.
Yep. And every now and then, one of the companies, I think Backblaze just did one, testing the reliability of brands of drives, too. Because,
right,
you know, they buy 50,000 drives, you know, from all the different manufacturers. And, you know, this year Western Digital is good. You know, next year Seagate is good. They go back and forth. So you can't say that one brand is better than another because they all have bad runs.
Right. If you're going to buy Western Digital, buy Purple. That's how that works.
I didn't even know they made a Purple until I got an ad for the 8-terabyte Purple.
Yep.
8 terabytes in a single drive.
Yep.
But then you need 2 for backup.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. Back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you, 19 minutes after the hour. Sound bites on the truly great and thanks to you, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edgar.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have Richard from Irondequoit, New York. Not on the line at all, not even a little bit. So while we hopefully get Richard back, Richard, give us a call back at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And in the meantime, I'll talk about the Samsung's monstrous 15-terabyte SSD drive. 15-terabyte SSD drive. Samsung has announced that it is now shipping its PM1633A SSD solid-state drive. That's a boringly mundane name for a drive that's anything but. The PM1633A isn't just the biggest SSD around, it's straight up the biggest drive around. At 15.36 terabytes, it dwarfs other SSDs and surpasses the capacity of even the very largest magnetic spinning disk. Remarkably, it packs all of this storage into a conventional 2.5-inch package. The company explained how this was done in August of last year. While traditional integrated circuits, whether processors or flash memory or RAM or anything else, have a flat, essentially 2D structure, this drive uses Samsung's 3D V-NAND technology, which vertically stacks 48 layers of NAND cells to greatly increase the storage density. Those of you who are in my class had better be listening because we're going to talk about this on Monday. The highest performance flash memory stores a single bit in each flash cell. Samsung trades a bit of performance for density, storing 3 bits per cell. Each die using this technology stores 256 gigabits or 32 gigabytes of data. The company then adds a second level of layering. 16 of the 256 gigabit dies themselves are stacked up, creating a package with 512 gigabytes capability. 32 of these are used to give the total 15.36 terabyte capacity. Samsung does plan future versions with 7.68 terabytes, 3.84 terabytes, 1.92 terabytes, a measly 960 gigabytes, and a paltry 480 gigabytes capacity. The 15.36 terabyte unit also has 16 gigs of RAM embedded. Obviously, the PM1633A is aimed at enterprise markets. Accordingly, it will be used using an enterprise interface. The 12 gigabit per second serial attached SCSI, or SA-SCSI, or SAS. The raw performance of this drive doesn't match the very fastest PCIe attached drives. However, these numbers handily beat spinning disks, and previously that was the only way of offering this kind of capacity. As for endurance, Samsung says the drive supports 15.3 terabytes of writes per day over its five-year life cycle. And that's an important point, by the way. SSD cards, the act of reading them does nothing to the drive itself, but the act of writing to an SSD card damages it. Damages it. So if you rarely write data and most often read data, your drive will last longer than if you do a lot of writing to that drive and read. That's why a lot of people are saying use SSD cards for your system drive, but put the swap and your data on a regular spinning disk, and that will give that drive the longest possible life.
It's also why the drive size was 480 gigabytes instead of 512. Because that extra 20-odd gigs is slack space so that when the cells die, it can move the data to a different cell. So you have a lot of cells left over to prolong the life of the drive.
Right. Samsung is leaving out an important detail, however, at least for now, the price. as is typical for enterprise products, if you have to ask, you can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
The previous generation PM1633 cost about $1,000 per terabyte. We're assuming the new drive cuts that, but we still wouldn't expect to see it for much less than $8,000. Still, if it means having the biggest drive ever made, that's a small price to pay, isn't it?
Yeah, really.
So, how many will you be ordering? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And Richard, call us back. We're wondering and worried about what happened to you. But yeah, we're seeing drive capacities get higher and higher. The problem, of course, is that means you're putting more and more data in one place.
Exactly, yep.
And as a system administrator, we know the term single point of failure. If that hard drive dies, all of your data go with it.
And when you partition it, that's the other failure.
Well, that's the right. Oh, I put all the data. I copy it all to the D drive. Is the D drive a separate actual physical device? Or is it just a volume on the one device?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's just a volume, you're screwed. Also, by the way, even if it's a separate drive,
it can fail too.
What happens if the reason you need the backup is because you lost your computer?
Or fire, flood, theft.
Fire, flood, theft, lightning strike, anything.
Crazy ex-girlfriend.
Crazy ex-girlfriend. Not that ex.
Pets. Pets. We've had many computers come in with pet excretions.
Yes.
Excretions. Right.
Solid liquid ad gas.
That's the truth. Many people have talk about how their pets actually don't like their computers. Because we spend more time with them than with the pets, and dogs somewhat, and cats in particular, will make their displeasure known. Yep.
At least with CRTs, they had a warm place to rest next to you.
Right.
Now that doesn't work anymore.
Right.
My friend Bobby Southpaw had his shop, and he had the old-fashioned CRTs.
Yeah.
And his cat used to love to sit.
Yep.
On top of the CRT.
Yep.
He goes, it's warm. Especially during the winter, he goes, I could always look and see where the cat was because he was always up on top of that CRT.
My cat used to push me back in my chair. I'd be working, and so I'm not paying much attention. And I suddenly realize I'm only typing with my right hand because my left hand is holding the cat.
How'd that happen?
I don't even know how that happened.
Yeah.
They just have no idea how that happened.
Slither in there, yeah. And it's
so
like,
I put her down, and I'd start to work, and the next thing I know, she has pushed me back in my chair so that she can lie on my chest with her head up under my beard and take a nap.
Sometimes I'll come home, and there'll be four cats on my chair, one on each armrest, one on the back, and one in the seat.
Yep.
And I can usually move three of them.
Yeah. Well, the cat I used to have would drape herself across the back of my neck, which meant in the winter I was nice and warm.
Yep.
In the summer I was sweltering.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't stop me from doing stuff.
Yeah.
Although she was 20 pounds of cat. So, you know, that would get tiring after a while.
Heaven forbid I sneeze and every cat went, on my legs and my back. And my
right. I just realized my leg is going to heal now. My cat used to, when she really wanted to come up and be loved in particular, she would stand up on her hind legs and start kneading my thigh, which she never did if I was wearing shorts in the summer. But in the winter, when I'm actually wearing pants, she would really dig in there and she'd go right through the material into my leg until I picked her up by the scruff of the neck and put her on my chest and petted her. But now that's going to heal. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bodan from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Bodan. How you doing?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. Having a little issue when I'm transferring some of my files over from my old XP computer to my new one, which is OS X. And according to what I have loaded, I do have a Microsoft Photo program on the machine. And I transferred over a bunch of stuff from what I call my briefcase, but it contains JPEG or JPG files, which when I also double-checked the default settings for associations with the program, they should all open up in Photos. And when I double-click on a JPG file, I get a box that says, rather red circular box with an X that says file system error, and it gives me a number. I have no idea. I sense that I've got this photo viewer in the new OS X, but I can't get the JPG files to open up automatically.
Do others work?
Huh?
Do other types of pictures work, like PNGs or GIFs or any of those?
Well, The stuff that I've transferred over so far were strictly JPGs.
Right. Now, when you say you've gone from XP to OS X, do you actually mean a Mac or are you saying Windows 10?
Windows.
Okay. So you should have any one of a dozen programs that would do that. One thing I might suggest you try.
But is Windows Photos built in to Windows 10 now?
Right. I don't know that it is. One thing I might suggest you do is download a program called Irfan View.
Say again, please.
It's called Irfan View, I-R-F-A-N View.
Okay, Irfan View, okay.
No, Irfan, I-R-F-A-N. It's the guy's first name.
Okay, Irfan View, okay.
Yeah. And Steve's going to put up a link to it at some point. The basic idea being there that Irfan View is an amazing product to begin with. And secondly, just in case there is no...
Windows 10 uses a program called Photos, which he was talking about. That's why I kept thinking he was saying Mac OS 10, because it uses a program called Photos, too. There is a way to get Windows Photo Viewer back as well. But you were saying you were pulling these photos out of the briefcase.
Well, I transferred them from my briefcase on XP, but they are a JPG file,
right.
And when I right-click on it, I can say open with, and it does show photos as one of my options. Paint, it does open up in Paint, though. That's the thing. It does open in Paint.
Oh, interesting. Then the problem might be with Photos.
Try that's to open weird. Photos
Well, it's
first.
One of the reasons I suggested, right, I also, that's one of the reasons I suggested trying Irfan View, because if it opens in that, we know the problem is the Windows Photo app. And
how can I open up that program? I want to try to find it where under the old system I could find all the programs. I just can't find how to open up that Photos program.
What you do is you go down to that little box where Cortana is.
Yeah.
And just type in photo.
Just type in search photo?
And just the word photo.
Okay.
And you'll see a list of all kinds of things that have something to do with photo. And the first block generally is programs, and you should see MS Photo there.
Yeah, I did load. I also ingested for my Panasonic camera the Panasonic PhotoFun Studio. They seem to show up in there once I open up that program, unless it. Okay, there I do. Now I can. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Here's your issue. This may be your issue. When you add more than one of any type of program, and in your case, that would be photo viewing programs.
Yeah.
The last one wins. So what happens is every time you load one of these, it assumes it's going to be the only one. And I'm saying install.
Uh-huh.
It assumes it's the only one, and so it takes over all the associations.
Uh-huh.
So it is possible that whatever you loaded last is a very specific program that does not understand JPEGs.
Okay.
And is having a problem understanding JPEGs. One thing loading IrfanView will do is make it the default. Well, it'll actually ask you. It's polite enough to ask.
Yeah.
And if you say yes, go ahead and take over all these associations, then you should be able to double-click on a JPEG and open it in IrfanView. If you want to go back to Microsoft Photo, then one of the things you can do there is to go into the setup, not the setup, the
settings,
and tell it to take over the associations.
Got it. Because I did download a program to watch some of my video clips. I downloaded VLC Media Player, and I do like that for video and stuff like that.
That's a great program.
Yeah. But again, I was having issues with that. And the only other thing I don't like with OS X, at least on my computer, it came with no Word program like my old XP came, at least with Microsoft Word. Now they want $150 or $100 a year to run Office, download Office 365.
Yep, no, or you can now take a look at, of course, LibreOffice or Google Docs.
I downloaded from you
WordPad
guys, I downloaded your recommendation, OpenOffice.
Yeah, OpenOffice, yep. Same thing. OpenOffice and LibreOffice are two versions of the same program.
Okay. So I downloaded that also. So, all right, let me go into the photo thing, and maybe I'll turn off the Panasonic program, which I did download. Well, I did install last week, and then I had to go and update it because it was not made for OS X. But there was a driver update that took over and made it work in OS X.
Yeah, maybe unless you really need that, you might just uninstall it.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you for your advice. Always greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have fun. Yeah, it's one of the things that we don't think about is the load order of programs. Whatever comes in last wins. So, like we said, if you load IrfanView, it will and say go ahead and take over all the associations. From then on, anything you click on, it will open in IrfanView rather than in something else.
Right, which is sometimes annoying, and the problem he may be running into if he loaded this Panasonic program and.
And there's something wrong with it, or it doesn't really run under 10, or whatever it might happen to be.
And there's usually no way to tell the other program to grab them all again without just reinstalling it.
Right. Well, some of them do. Somewhere in the settings, you can say, set yourself up as a default for these types of programs. Not all of them do that, and they should, but that's the way that works. Nothing I can say about that. I would suggest that those of you looking for a good viewer and editor, as a matter of fact, IrfanView does some pretty good editing stuff as well. There is a 64-bit version for those of you doing 64-bit things. There's a bunch of plugins. There's skins so that it looks different. Just a bunch of pretty good stuff. So you can view stuff, you can convert it and optimize it and scan it, print it, create slideshows, do all kinds of cool stuff. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Sound bites and the truly great, and thanks to you, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Paul from Brighton, New York on the line. Hi, Paul. What's up?
Yeah, I've been using Malware Bytes Home Premium, and lately I've been getting a couple of messages saying that a website had been accessed that was, I guess, dangerous or possibly that... you know, that it was not safe to be there.
Sure.
But it didn't inform me. There's no message indicating what that website was.
Yeah. Yeah. We see that fairly regularly. One of the problems, of course, is that that message may not, in fact, do you any good. And the reason is because what's happened is you've gone to a perfectly legitimate website that you've been to a million times, and you may go back to another million times. But because it has, say, for example, Google Ads or some other company's ad network on it, somebody bought a bad ad, right? Somebody bought an ad and put malware in it.
Right.
What I suggest doing is, what is your browser?
I use Firefox mostly.
Firefox has this. There's a plugin called WOT for Web of Trust. And what Web of Trust is, it's a crowdsourced program. So what that means is people rate websites as to whether or not they're safe or child-friendly or whatever it is. And what happens is every time you see a link somewhere, you'll see a little circle next to it. That circle will be green if Web of Trust says it's safe and whatever it might be. Yellow, which says, we've had a couple of people
caution.
Say it's not right, caution. If it's red, don't go there. If it's gray, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And so I find adding Web of Trust to my browser and having it find places for me. So, for example, if you go to Google right now and type in, I don't care, anything, pandas.
And the Google does some of this searching and checking before it even sends you to the result, too.
Right. So most of what you'll see on Google, particularly for the result of pandas, is all little green circles. But if you see, you know, if you search for, you know, you'll hear about a new malware product, a new virus or whatever on the news, and you'll go look it up. You might see some red circles next to that, which is a place that actually will try to download and install that for you.
And the problem is getting worse because of the way the ad networks are working, that you go to an average website, there may be, you know, a dozen links it loads, and maybe hundreds of links it loads in the background to load up all those ads. And if one of those ads has a malicious content to it, then the website you're on is perfectly safe, but one of the links it's trying to load can be bad.
Right. So what will happen? Will Malwarebytes issue the warning first, and then you get to see what the warning is, or do you first get the warning before you get to the Malwarebytes?
No, Malwarebytes doesn't know what's happening on that website until it tries to download something, so you're already there. Yeah, and that's true with any of them. None of them are prescient. They, you know, you have to actually be on the site and see what happens.
And
before.
The thing of it is, you know, even if it could, it depends on whether how, you know, soon that attack came under, you know, out, mm-hmm. that it can be detected.
Yeah, and a couple hours you go back to that same website and it's fine because the bad ad has been caught and removed.
Yeah,
right.
Well, in fact, we ran into that here this morning, trying to log into the proxy server here at the school. Google warned me that this might be a bad website. The security certificate is signed by monroe.edu, so apparently now they're a CA.
Right.
And my browser didn't know they were a CA, and so it's warning me. So,
right. And Google is doing that, and others are beginning to follow suit. If Google doesn't know who signed a certificate, you will get a warning that says this might not be safe.
And the problem is the average user won't know what that means. And
right.
Which is why I was really glad it took me a while to find the continue anyway button, because most people would just say continue anyway.
Yeah.
Right. One of the things that we're going to run into with Soundbites is that at some point Google is going to say, if you do not have a certificate signed by an authority we know, we will tell people this is not a safe site, which is good, except that now that's going to cost us money.
Well, there is a program isn't the right word anymore. There's a website called Let's Encrypt, founded by the Linux Foundation. I think the EFF is involved in it too, Mozilla and Akamai, Google. And they are offering free security certificates. So you can get SSL security. It's not domain validation. It's not extended validation. It's just encryption, SSL. Uh-huh. So you can have an encrypted certificate for free to put on your own website. You may not care if your data is encrypted. There may be nothing on there that needs to be encrypted. But because of the security, issues going on now, most companies are starting to encrypt their data just to be safe. And it used to cost quite a bit of money to get an encryption certificate, or you would sign your own encryption certificate, and then the browser would complain, and people would say continue anyway.
Right.
So now this Let's Encrypt it's in a public beta. So if you want to get a free SSL encryption certificate for your website, it's now working, and it's a recognized certificate authority, and so the browsers are recognizing it, and it should start working out pretty good. And that's sort of what strikes me as the irony of this whole FBI Apple mess, is that Apple and all the other phone companies encrypted their phones because the government was snooping on us, and now the FBI wants in so they can snoop on us.
You're right.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Thanks.
And actually, that brings up a nice segue here. This coming Wednesday at 7 p.m. at East High School is the Apple Cider Users Group meeting. And we're going to be talking about a lot of these encryption issues, what's going on with Apple and the FBI. We are also going to be holding our club elections. So vote for Nick.
Yeah. When I was on the ballot of all three computer groups in town.
Yep.
I remember that.
I was a member of none of them at that point because I wasn't even in Rochester at that point, but I was on the ballot.
So that's Wednesday, March 9th at 7 p.m.
To be clear, I am not running for anything on any place, anywhere, anyhow. I am not running. If nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve.
And usually the way it takes is one write-in candidate can often win.
That's exactly right. Although, if you want to support your community, in this case, the Apple community, if you want to support the community and see to it that a group as really cool and useful as Apple Cider continues, then get involved. Nothing makes me angrier than, boy, this used to be a great resource and now it's gone. That's too bad. Well, what did you do to keep it up? Oh, nothing. Not me.
Yeah.
Oh, screw you then.
I don't have
care.
The time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have been seeing an aging membership as the younger people use the internet. You don't need a physical meeting place. So, we were before the internet. We're pushing 40 years now that we've been around. And back then you had to get together physically. We'd haul our computers into the rooms and we'd share information and someone found something cool. And
if you wanted new programs, you came and looked through the catalog.
Yep.
Then you gave me, because I was the librarian for a while.
Yeah, I was the librarian for Cider.
Yep.
I still have the library in my closet.
Yeah, I bet you do. I actually wrote a HyperCard.
Yeah. To have an index.
It would do all that. And not only had the index, but I could come and say, all right, this disk, this disk. And then it would say, insert the next disk, insert the next disk. And then it would print out a receipt because you paid a couple of bucks, whatever it was.
Cover the cost of the disks.
Every time. And so I wrote this whole HyperCard stack that did that. And I still... One of the reasons I hate Apple as much as I do today is because they killed HyperCard. Sons of pups.
SuperCard and RunRev are available now with that same concept, but you still have to pay
for them. They're
not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But one guy had a gang loader for floppy disks where you could put 20 blank floppy disks and it would feed it into the drive, make the copy, spit it out, drop to the ground. And then the next one would feed it into the drive. So you didn't have to sit there and feed the floppy disks yourself.
Paul Casarino had one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. PC Cube,
yeah.
That's gone now. That's now rolled into Rochester Computer Society,
mm-hmm.
which is another great group, by the way. So
they meet the third Thursday of the month, I think it is, and Cider meets the second Wednesday of the month.
Right. And Rochester Google meets the first Thursday of the month. So you don't have to miss any of these meetings. It's excellent. But yeah, you should get, I know, we do it all off the internet now, and God forbid we have to actually look another human being in the face.
Rochester Computer Society is the second Tuesday of the month.
There you go.
So who's
and they meet at St. John's Greece as well, don't they?
St. John Meadows.
Yeah, St. John Meadows.
Yep.
So that's where we meet.
Their meeting is this week also. So a lot of the March meetings are early this week because the first was on a Tuesday.
Right.
Yep.
But you should check these out for your if you're a Windows person, then it's the Rochester Computer Society. If you're a Mac person, it's Apple Cider. If you like Google, then it's Rochester Googles. And there are like 50 others that we don't have any information on right at the moment. But there are a lot of people who can help you. We get a lot of people saying, I need somebody to take a look at my laptop. I need somebody to come to my house. I need somebody to do whatever. The first resource should always be these user groups because they are there are a lot of people who have plenty of free time and are willing to help folks out. There are lots of good tech support people who would charge you but still would come to your home and do whatever. And so you should definitely check those things out.
Oh, there's a Git meeting on the 16th.
Git.
If you're into Git or GitHub.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
If you know what that is, go to the meeting.
Yeah, if you don't know what that is, you can stay home and drink. If you go to the meeting, you should drink. It's Git. Anyway, we're done for another week, and I want to thank everybody who called in. Apologize to those to whom we did not get next week. Call earlier. Don't go away, of course, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. We will be back in just 166 hours with more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and me, Nick Francesco, and you. We are Soundbites, and thanks to you, we are here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.